Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, December 14th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things in Cornwall, England?
Very good. Thank you, Graham. So
I wanted to tell you something. This is the 75th episode of Wiretaps, which is amazing to me. And I did a little research online. I was like, what do you do to celebrate a 75th anniversary of something? And it turns out some people have actually been married for 75 years. So there literally is that list that you can see online. But then I found out that what you normally would give someone to celebrate a 75th anniversary of sorts is diamonds or gold. So I'm not going to do that for you, Alex, but I'm excited. I'm excited that we've hit 75 episodes of Wiretaps. It's been a lot of fun.
No, that's very good. I don't think we've skipped a week, have we?
I don't know. Yeah, I think, much to the chagrin of our producers, but yeah, we keep them coming. So it's great. One other thing I wanted to mention is that we figured out a way. I know some of our listeners were asking about, back episodes, which you can easily get on the website, but which were not coming through on some of the, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You could only see like the last 20 or 30 episodes. So we made some changes, and now there should be like more than 100 or so episodes that easily come into your feed. So you can go back and listen to older episodes if you want. And I just want to remind everyone to please rate and review the show. But Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about last week and what to expect this week? Because we are in the middle of one of the craziest points in the admissions cycle. So tell us a little bit about what's been going on.
Yeah, I mean, it was a super busy week last week, which is absolutely fantastic. Lots of folks getting lots of decisions from some of the very best schools on the planet. So that's very good. I'm always a little bit nervous because we're recording this podcast even before the Harvard decisions are supposed to be released sometime later today. Although when you hear this, it would have been a few days ago. So assuming that goes smoothly, that would be very good too. But yeah, we've seen some great results from a lot of schools. The one I want to point out in particular, Graham, I don't know if you saw this on LiveWire, and I didn't bring it up before we came on air, but I wanted to share it with you. We had a candidate admitted to Stanford, and it was the candidate's fourth attempt.
Wow.
At applying at Stanford. So I just say hats off to that candidate, whomever they are, for absolute determination and resilience in the application process, and for achieving, I think, a dream. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. So well done to that person, cool. Graham. Absolutely brilliant.
And what do we have coming up this week? Because I know, so last week, I think we had, Yale and Kellogg, Stanford, Tepper, you said HBS.
Yeah.
Assuming that comes off without a hitch. Darden, I saw, Emory, but what's this week?
Yeah, no, like I say, lots of stuff last week, including our friend or the candidate that got in Stanford on the fourth season of applying. This week, yeah, we got plenty of action on the table this week. Keenan Flagler, Wharton, Sloan, Haas, McCombs, Duke, Cornell, HEC Paris, amongst some of the very top schools, again, scheduled to release decisions. So I anticipate a really busy week again this week, Graham.
Yeah, looks good. I'm looking forward to seeing more of these decisions come out. One other thing, we've been, as candidates get decisions and they start to do a little bit more due diligence and think about where they want to go, we continue to publish those Real Humans. And we recently published London Business School and UT Austin McCombs, which McCombs is being, releasing decisions this week. And LBS actually released theirs a little while back. So lots of data for you to dig in on if you want to learn about life in these programs. We also continue to run down all the employment outcome reports that schools have been publishing and to offer our kind of point of view on that. So those are all on the site. The last thing I wanted to mention before we dive in and do a couple of wiretaps here is that we ran an article on the site about the level of competition in the MBA applicant pool this year. I feel like every major media outlet has been talking about this, increased app volume. But it's all been, there's been a lot of speculation, right? Because no one really knows until the schools at the very end of the admission season tell us, like, how many applications did they receive and what were their acceptance rates and so on. But we know from looking at LiveWire that we get kind of leading indicators, right? In terms of, the volume of posts to LiveWire and and the outcomes that we see. And it turns out that we are indeed seeing a sort of lower percentage of interview invitations overall in terms of amongst our LiveWire posters, and also more rejections and increased volume too, right? So all those would spell kind of a more competitive season. And so we ran a piece on the site that sort of explains why this is happening and goes through the data that you get in LiveWire. So Alex, any thoughts on that in terms of like what's going on this year and, you know, anything you're thinking about this level of competition this year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the data sort of reveals and represents what a lot of people are speculating, which is applicant volumes are up across most, if not all, schools. The reason why the percentage decline in the interview invites is when you have a percentage based on that applicant volume, schools are essentially going to invite the same number of folks, you know, from season to season, because they're going to, you know, they essentially have the same size classes coming in, so they know how many people they need to interview. So when you've got an increased volume of applicants, you're going to get a smaller percentage interview invite, and that's what we're seeing in this LiveWire data. And similarly, you get a high percentage of the applicant pool sadly getting rejected, which is again what we're seeing in the LiveWire data. And obviously, as folks will want to make very clear, this is based off LiveWire data, which may represent 5-10% of the actual applicant pool. I don't know what that number is, Graham.
It's growing.
But it is a growing percentage. I do know that over the last several years, but it is based off of our data. We're not absolutely confirming this is what's happening in the marketplace, but I think it's a pretty solid indicator. And, you know, we're basing it off a lot of data points, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And I think what's fun about this is we built LiveWire for the applicants, right? For all of you who are listening. I mean, we built this thing to help you guys communicate with one another, share in your trials and tribulations, your ups and downs in the admissions process. But it's turned out to be really useful as well to look at this data in aggregate. And that's why we, you know, ran that article, because we really want to be able to share with you know, with the applicant community, what we think is happening. And I think it's amazing that LiveWire is actually a really interesting kind of leading indicator, because, you know, again, a lot of the big media outlets are saying, well, we don't know for sure what it's going to be. But, you know, on some levels, we do. We have some sense from what's happening on LiveWire. So it's great to be able to provide that. And I guess, you know, another great opportunity to pitch the data dashboard that we have, the subscription on our site, where you can get access to all kinds of ways to slice LiveWire data and look at it. And it's like $20 for a month or $50 for the entire application season. So if you're someone who really wants to get close with the numbers and the system, definitely sign up for that. But Alex, anything else? I noticed that you sent me two ApplyWire entries this week and one DecisionWire. So we've officially begun these wiretaps where we're going to start talking about people's decision-making process too, which I'm excited about. But is there anything else you wanted to share before we move on?
No, I think we should get on with it. Yes.
All right, let's do it. All right, so this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is applying to 7 schools, and those schools are Berkeley, Dartmouth, Duke, LBS, Michigan, UVA, and Yale. And they're going to be aiming to start this coming fall, so 2021. This person's been working in strategic operations for the health department in a major city, and they've actually most recently been knee-deep in, or I should probably say neck-deep in COVID-19 response stuff, basically since February. So they've been really crunching on that. They hope to get into either entrepreneurial or potentially social impact type work after business school. Their GRE score is a 315. And GPA is a 3.6. It's from an Ivy League institution. They have 6.5 years of work experience. They are located in New York, and they would love to stay in the New York area. Now, that all sounds somewhat straightforward, but it turns out this is a fairly complex candidate or candidacy, in the sense that they are 37 years old, and they basically went to university at an Ivy part-time over the last, you know, 6 years or so to complete their degree while working And so it's a really unconventional candidacy. I think that they didn't really state, but they had a bit of a, you know, kind of not much happening between age 18 and 30 in terms of completing a college degree or traditional work experience. I think they were, it's unclear actually from the post what was going on, but they mentioned some mental health issues and maybe even just dealing with family stuff. So this is a very unconventional candidacy. But Alex, what do you make of this? And I know you had some back and forth on the site with this candidate too.
Yeah, I mean, this guy says, "You guys rock." So we got to like the guy right from the get-go.
That's right.
Yes. Just to throw that in there. You know, you can look at this candidate through two separate lenses. On the one hand, you can say, wow, this guy has overcome a lot and redirected themselves and is clearly now on a good path going forward. And, you know, some of the challenges that this guy's had to overcome is probably going to be difficult for an adcom to have a lot of empathy for, because they won't have had to have dealt with some of the levels of anxiety, mental health issues. Their parents had mental health issues, because it looks to me like this impacted this person throughout their 20s.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows what they actually were able to accomplish during that time. But clearly, from that time going forward, let's say at the, you know, age of 30 going forward or whatever, they were able to do something to really get out of whatever it is that they were in and get on a very solid, strong pathway. And I'm assuming that their work experience now, what they've been able to accomplish over the last 5 or 6 years, has been impactful. They've done very well. I don't know this, I'm just assuming this. And they've also combined this with an academic endeavor and ultimately completed their undergraduate degree with a very strong GPA, having to juggle full-time work at a high caliber university.
Right.
So that to me is super, super good. What I would like to have seen to back that up are two additional points. One is a very strong test score. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And secondly, a really strong understanding of exactly why they're getting the MBA now and exactly what they plan to do going forward. I'm not sure that I saw that necessarily reading through the entry. You may have a different point of view on that, Graham. I might have missed that. But those two things are super important for this type of candidate, because this candidate is already an outlier in terms of age, you know, 37 or whatever they are. We're not ageist here, but the point is they're already going to face challenges fitting in and show how they're going to fit in, show how they're going to be super involved and engaged in the entire MBA communities and so on and so forth, in class, out of class, in their career and stuff. So they need to, and typically an older candidate, one thing they will come to the program with is an absolute plan of why they're there. At the age of 37, if you're prepared to, you know, drop 150 or 200 grand on your future, you're doing it for very specific reasons. Typically, we think of the opportunity cost as increases with age and so on and so forth, right? So bear that in mind. But I'm a little bit worried about the GRE score, Graham. It's 315, which I am guessing does not reflect the candidate's ability in the standardized test. And I would like to have seen them be able to go back, retake the test and get it well into those 320s. And then you can combine that score with a very solid, strong GPA, with a really interesting story of, you know, turnaround that, again, some adcom can really appreciate, with a very strong goal focus. Then you could be like, yeah, a couple of schools are going to take, and I would still say a risk on this candidate. But as it stands right now, Graham, I'm not exactly sure that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I mean, I saw the test score and was nervous. I also saw that they did mention, oh, you know, I've been so overwhelmed with the COVID response, you know, at work, in terms of, you know, because they're working for the Department of Health, right? So they've been overwhelmed, and they indicated that they didn't really have time to prepare for the GRE. And I get that, but that won't really fly with the AdCom. I mean, I just feel like, you know, there's been many a candidate who's been dealing with this and has, you know, on different levels and has managed to secure a high test score. So I just worry about that a little bit, especially, like you said, older candidate. Sometimes getting a really strong test score can be very reassuring for the admissions team. So, that's the first thing. And then I think, I mean, I like you, I'm a big fan of this. Wow, look at this turnaround. They went to an Ivy League school. They did it part-time while working. They got a 3.6, which is nothing to, you know, be, that's really great, right? So nothing to be ashamed of there. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of, there's this potential for a storyline. But again, I was sort of wondering, what did they do in all those years leading up to the turnaround? And how can they position that? And then also, how does their current work experience relate to their future goals? Like you said, you've got to have a clear plan. And I, looking at the target school list, I'm worried. I think that unless that GRE comes up substantially, they may need to kind of shift their list a bit or add to it. Some of our community members mentioned UT Austin McCombs as well as Cornell Johnson as possibilities. I think those were good recommendations. It just, I want to make sure this candidate casts a wide net, because that could be, you know, a big part. Like you're saying, even if they do get in, someone's going to be taking a bit of a risk, right? And so you've got to cast a wide net. The last thing I wanted to mention about this candidate is that they did say in their notes that they too fall asleep on Monday nights while listening to our podcast. So I think we might have a problem here, Alex, and that everyone is saying that we're putting them to sleep. But anyway, so I don't know what we can do about that. But hopefully this person really does, they're going to apply now, I get. If they could just somehow indicate they're retaking the test and get it done in January and submit that test score, I feel like that could help.
Yeah, and I would reconfirm another point that you made. They really do need to cast a wide net. I assume they absolutely want to go to school next season. They're not going to come back as a reapplicant. Again, based on the fact that they're 37, they need to get this piece of the journey underway.
Yeah.
So, you know, really looking at, is going to a top 20 program viable in terms of the payback? Is it worthwhile? Or even a top 25 program, right? So, you know, McCombs very good, and I think you also mentioned Cornell or whatever, but some might argue there still reaches with a couple of these issues that we're facing in this candidacy. So like I say, there's absolutely no doubt you turn your life around like this candidate has been able to do. There's massive kudos for doing that, and the AdCom totally admire that, but then you've got to back that up with some of these other issues, and a lower test score is going to hurt in this regard, and making sure that goal focus is extremely well developed as an older candidate, I think, is going to be important too.
Yeah, well said. So I wish them the best of luck. Again, this is a long journey that this candidate has been on, and you know, it's really brave of them to share it on the website. And I do think that they're going to find success. They just need to cover all their bases and ideally boost this test score, ideally cast a wide net.
Yeah.
So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate has five schools on the target list, and they are Dartmouth, Georgetown, Michigan, UVA, and Yale. And they are not planning on attending business school until the fall of 2022. So they have a little bit, you know, about a year or so before they're going to be applying. They've been working in business development in the tech domain. They want to get into consulting or maybe nonprofit social interest after business school. Companies that are on the initial target list for them are Bain, BCG, McKinsey, and Bridgespan Group. They have a GMAT score of 720. And a GPA of 3.29. They've got 4 years of work experience, located in New York. They would love to end up on the East Coast. They also indicated in their notes that they are a white male, and they shared a lot of great background info. But the first thing I want to note is that they're basically an account lead for a privately held tech consulting company, and they have 8 direct reports now, it looks like, and are kind of basically running the sales. And I think they're responsible for like $11 million of annual revenue. So big time job helping to kind of pitch consulting projects and managing a kind of whole team that's doing that. Their goals, though, are a little bit different, and I think we can get into that as we discuss. But what do you make of this candidate on the surface? And is there anything that you wanted to share about them as we kind of discuss here?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, they've got another year, I think, in terms of when they're planning to apply, although I think they could quite well have applied this season and look very competitive. You know, with the 720 GMAT, 4 years work experience, 329 GPA, the work experience does look super good, actually. It looks like they've done very well. They've got direct reports. They check a lot of boxes. I'm sure they can show impact and various other things. So that's all very good. What struck me as the biggest weakness, and I think the candidate acknowledged this, is the GPA and what they need to be able to do about that. So it's a 3.29 GPA, Graham. And a little bit of context here, and I'll get your take directly on it. Their first generation going to college, which I do think is an important factor. They're from a military background, and their father was deployed a couple of times. They had to spend some additional time back home with their family during their college experience. First gen, 329 GPA, from a military background. What do you think about this component? Because I'm always a big believer, if you can identify the weakest element of your candidacy and either strengthen it or add context to it or whatever it might be, that's going to raise your overall profile. So to me, it's this GPA, Graham.
Yeah, and they mentioned that GPA comes from they were a finance and math major at a competitive university, but not an elite university. Those are their words. I'm a little nervous about the sort of 1-2 punch of a 329 and a 720. The 720 is pretty darn close to the average at top schools, so it's less, you know, I think you can't call a 720 worrying in any way, shape, or form. But when you couple it with a GPA that's below average and by quite a bit, then you start to say, okay, the academic profile is not going to win them any awards here. And so what could they do? I think you and I discussed, you know, they're a military brat. So, you know, this candidate themselves was not in the military, but the father was, and as you said, was deployed. And they pointed out how their GPA suffered because they would return home when the dad was deployed to the Middle East so that they could help the mom with their siblings, taking care of stuff around the house. And so I think that the GPA suffered because of that. And I would love to see an optional essay that explains that. And you and I actually talked before we came on air. You had a point of view about that and whether admissions committees would be understanding of that or not.
Yeah, I mean, and I wanted to get your read on it because I'm speaking a little bit out of turn or something. But I think someone who's a first gen going to college is probably going to have a bit more sort of affinity to supporting their family.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the family environment they've been in. You know, if none of your family have been to college, you've always been very supportive of each other and so on and so forth. So when the father is deployed, the first reaction or whatever of someone that's in this sort of situation might be, they've got to make sure that their family is well taken care of, and they can't be sat at college, you know, doing well with all their mates, with all these clubs and whatever, but they've got to spend time at home and so forth. So I can absolutely sympathize, I guess, with that type of mentality. And I think it is somewhat of a result of someone being first gen to college. So these sort of issues are all sort of related to each other. And as you say, I think this is great fodder for the optional essay. Look, a 3.29 GPA is not disastrous. So we don't need to see 2 or 3 pages story on this particular issue. But I think a paragraph or two that adds some context might well go a very long way. I think that could be very helpful for this candidate, because I do think that they have really strong impact at work. That's very good. They do some things outside of work. That's very good. And I do think that their goals, whilst they've got another year before they're applying, so they can sort of further finesse and fine-tune those goals, I think those goals are related more to their life experience and their experience growing up as a military brat, as they put in their terms, rather than a goal as an extension of their current work experience. But I can buy that. I think that can be very good if it's articulated effectively.
Yeah, and that was one of my concerns was, so my view is they actually mentioned they're planning a retake on the GMAT. They're wondering if they could, you know, should take a class or two or something and get a better, you know, kind of build an alternative transcript. And I feel like those ducks will line up in a row. You know, they have time to get that sorted.
Yeah.
For me, one of the things that jumped out was, you know, they've had this really successful career in the kind of tech consulting domain and in a kind of business development / you know, sales kind of role. And so I wondered, like, they need to somehow pitch this career goal, which is much more of a kind of public sector plan that they have to sort of, and so I just wasn't seeing the direct connection. But as you point out, it might have more to do with how they were raised and the kind of experience they had as a military brat. And so they just need to kind of connect these dots so that the admissions reader can understand why they took the job that they have now, why they've excelled in it, and how is there anything from that experience that will carry forward into the role that they want later, because that can often be helpful to sort of have that thread that, you know, follows along the course of the candidate's history and stuff. So in any event, I think this candidate could do well. And again, their target school list is a reasonable group of schools. And so, yeah, and they have time, right? You know, they're not applying right now.
Yeah.
So I feel like things are going to line up for them.
Yeah, frankly, Graham, I think they need to add at least one or two M7 programs onto their list. They've got another year to apply. They can, you know, address a couple of these issues that we talked about. They're clearly smart. They've done very well at work. Why wouldn't you apply to, you know, Sloan or Kellogg or whatever? I mean, they've got a nice mix through to the top 16. So I think that's a sensible set of targets.
But yeah,
You've got to have a reach or two in there. If they win across the board and get admitted everywhere, they're always going to wonder if they could have gone somewhere else.
Yep. Fair point. That's been a recurring theme on the podcast of late. So anyway, thanks to that person for sharing their background and for not falling asleep while they listen to the to the podcast, apparently. But in any event, let's move on. We're going to talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a Decision Wire post that we received from a candidate who is undecided as to where to attend. This person's been admitted to Duke, Michigan, and Kellogg, although it sounds like they're waiting news from Kellogg still at the time of the post. And they have money from Duke. They didn't specify how much. They have a free ride, or a full ride, sorry, from Michigan. And again, they're awaiting news on Kellogg. They're going to be starting school, obviously, next fall, and they want to get into consulting after business school. Their GMAT score was a 740. This candidate is located in India, and they write, "I am so confused. Ross with a full ride seems like a swinger." I presume they mean kind of like a no-brainer. That's not an expression I'm familiar with. "And I'm waiting to hear from Kellogg. Is there a significant difference between career paths of alumni of these schools in the long run?" So that was the question they posed. Some members of the community chimed in. What do you make of this quandary, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I selected this candidate because I just wanted to sort of tease in back into the Wiretaps, the idea of doing these Decision Wire entries. So I find them quite interesting. And, you know, obviously, once people have multiple options, which, you know, some people are very blessed to have those choices to make, then yeah, sometimes these choices are not particularly straightforward. In this candidate's case, they probably know now if they got into Kellogg or not, or God forbid they got placed on the wait list or something like that. But yeah, Kellogg should have given them the news last week. So hopefully they'll come back and inform us of that. You know, for different candidates, the answer to this question is going to be different. So what's your risk tolerance for a start? Like a Michigan full ride really lowers the risk of going to business school, right? So if someone doesn't have the resources or whatever, that makes that sort of Ross opportunity extremely compelling. And obviously we're in the sort of pandemic era in which we're in. I imagine lots of candidates' sort of risk tolerance has dropped. So scholarship money this season may well play a bigger factor in decision making than perhaps it has played in the last few seasons. So I'll throw that out there for a start. Another thing to consider is your goal to do MBB consulting? You know, that sort of McKinsey, Bain, BCG, top tier consulting right out of business school. And if that's what the candidate, you know, aspires to do, you could argue that you have a better opportunity to get in the door at MBB at Kellogg than you would have at Ross. Although you can certainly do it at Ross, and maybe as a scholarship student with a full ride, maybe you stand out a bit more at Ross. You've got to dial that into it also. Another thing to consider is if you've got an offer at Kellogg and it's not a full ride, maybe now you can negotiate at Kellogg. There's just lots of sort of moving parts to making these decisions. But yeah, full ride at Ross. I mean, this person's based in India, so I'm guessing that their risk tolerance is a little bit lower than someone directly from North America or whatever. Full ride at Ross might well be the right answer, but for each candidate, the answer will be different, Graham.
Yeah, and I think you've made a number of interesting points. I mean, number one is when you have a full ride somewhere, it's not just the money, but it's that's actually something that goes on your resume, right? You know, full tuition or you know whatever, full tuition scholarship student, that's a bullet point on the resume that people take note of, right? And so there's a bit of a feather in the cap element to it. I also think you made another great point, which is if this person is located in India and maybe eventually returns to India, coming back with like no debt from an MBA could be really advantageous, right? So there's that as well. I think, you know, as we said at the outset, the story is not the kind of verdict's not in yet because they don't know if they or at the time that they posted this, they didn't know if they'd gotten into Kellogg or not. And as you said, again, you can always negotiate. I think some schools have a kind of, you know, strict no negotiation policy, but it never hurts to ask. It never hurts to write a letter or email to the school saying, hey, you know, really want to come here. I've been offered X from school Y, and I would love to be able to do it to, you know, to come to your program, but is there any flexibility on the financial aid side of things? You know, and then if the worst thing a school says to you is no, as long as you're polite about it, it's not going to taint the school's view of you. Again, some schools are a bit more flexible than others, but it's definitely worth a shot. I often, you know, we often talk as well about how, you know, would Harvard care if you have a free ride at Penn State? You know, no, right? There's the scholarship negotiation works best when you're dealing with kind of peer schools or schools that are quite close to one another. So that's another just tidbit that people need to keep in mind because, you know, you could go to Harvard and say, oh, you know, I need more because Penn State's giving me a free ride. And they might say, well, you can go to Penn State. We're not, you know, it's not, they don't view themselves in the same category per se, right? So that's just something to keep in mind. But in any event, I think this is an interesting, it's a great to kick off the kind of decision wire season. We always, you know, for the next, well, handful of weeks, we'll probably will filter some of these in, especially when people have really tough decisions to make. But yeah, any other thoughts on this candidate? I mean, obviously, congratulations to them for getting into Duke and Michigan, and perhaps they also got good news from Kellogg in the interim since they've posted. But yeah, interesting storyline here.
Yeah, no, I just wish them the best of luck. It is a proper first world problem, right? When you've got a couple of choices to make out of these wonderful opportunities. And but that said, it is very difficult to make these choices. So we can talk about it a little bit, help the candidate out. I mean, obviously, folks on Decision Wire, our community contributes and sort of helps a little bit in terms of how they would handle such a situation. But you know, you've also got to really think about, you know, to talk to your peers, like, you know, find people and share these anxieties and thoughts and that. But at the end of the day, absolutely fantastic, very well done, congratulations. And wherever you ultimately end up going, You'll have a terrific experience and you'll never look back on this decision. You'll never, you don't have sort of buyer's remorse, you know, the idea, well, what if I'd have gone there instead? You'll just absolutely fully embrace the experience you choose and have, and that will propel you to some really wonderful opportunities.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's funny, I just recorded a podcast, a kind of one-off episode with a couple of HBS grads who started a student loan company. And they were talking about when you have to make these decisions, how they seem so painful at the time. But that once you make the decision and get off to school, you never really look back. You know, you have a great experience. Again, it's first world problems, right? These are, they're all great schools.
And you know that you're quite humble, Graham. You know that full well yourself, right? I mean, you turned down what many would have presumed would have been the better choice to go to another choice, and you've never looked back.
No, yeah, I have not actually. Yeah, that's a good point. I wasn't actually thinking of my experience.
Well, I don't know if you've ever looked back. Maybe you do night, but I mean, you've not indicated that you have ever regretted. But you went to Wharton over Harvard, which other people do, but yeah. Conventional wisdom would have said you choose Harvard over Wharton, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I haven't looked back. I mean, I was an art history major in college. I wanted a really rigorous quantitative experience in my MBA. So, everyone has their reasons for what they do. But again, I think, this candidate will land on their feet, if I'm sure of it.
I thought it was because you liked the Phillies.
Yeah, and the Phillies too. They played a role. That's correct. anyway, so we've done it again, Alex. We've managed to spend 30 minutes or so talking about all things MBA admissions, and we'll be back in 1 week's time to do this all over again. I expect that we'll see a lot of decisions coming down the pipeline with all these schools giving notifications. So hopefully we'll have a good batch of people to discuss next week too. But thanks again for picking these out, and I guess we'll see you in 1 week.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Graham, and everybody stay safe and good luck.